Welcome to the Garbage Pod. One pod, one load of garbage.
29 and 28.
I've remanded in custody.
There's something really curious about this broadcast.
On the line, we have Richard Vose, who we haven't spoken to for a little while, but he's come online to talk to us about his latest venture. Hiya, Richard, how are you doing?
Hello, Mark. You know, I'm very well, thank you very much. It has been too long.
It certainly has.
It's mainly, I think, because I've sort of disappeared from the podosphere for a bit, having done the old Vobe show for however many years it is, and just sort of disappeared down a rabbit hole to do other things.
See, that's the thing with the Vobes. You always have things.
I certainly do.
So what is it you're doing at the moment?
Well, I've just spent the last couple of years writing. I've writing a children's book, and it's a sort of historical fantasy adventure for 9 to 12-year-olds, and it's taken a long time. And somebody said to me the other day, he said, Richard, why is it taking you so long to get your book out? And I said, well, I thought I could write until I actually started to do it. And then I realised, actually, I can't, and I effectively had to learn. I mean, I've been writing scripts since I was a kid, but this is slightly different, writing prose and aimed at children, where every word matters and every line needs to be clear. So I sort of had to go back to school, in a way, to learn how to write, as well as get this book, which isn't a short book, out. It's a trilogy at the moment, so there's three books, but there may be more. So it goes under the brand, if you like, of Splidge the Cragflinger. Splidge is the main character, and he becomes a cragflinger, which people won't know what that is until they start reading the book, of course, although I may well just tell you in a moment. So book one is The Royal Tournament, and it all takes place in the land of Gud. There is this tournament, which happens every 6 years, and it's the way that the king of the land can generate a big income, a bit like the chancellor on his budget, really. It's the way he can sort of generate some income for his much-needed citizens to do up the roads and to do up the palace and all those sort of things. And as it happens, everything is tumbling down, everything's falling to bits, so he's desperate for it. Unfortunately, the previous Royal Cragflinger, who is that everybody pits their wits and skills against, died of the plague. So the king is desperate for somebody else. And Splidge is the 12-year-old boy, the main hero, who has just come of age at 12. And in the land of Gud, that's when you have to go out and get a job. And he, more by accident than anything else, finds himself as the Royal Cragflinger. And a cragflinger, which this tournament is all pitched for, is what it kind of says, is somebody who flings crags. And a crag is this orange mop-like creature bred specially for the purpose. And Splidge is supposed to chase after this thing, grab it, and throw it at a special crag scoring board. It's the national sport in Gud. It's completely lunatic. But they do it. I was very aware when I sort of started writing this, I thought, oh, Gould, I've written myself into a corner here, because kids will be picking up their hamsters or their cats or their rabbits and throwing them at things. So I had to stringently make sure it said that these crags were specially bred and they enjoyed being flung. They had these suckers on their paws and they deflect the air currents through the when they're being thrown, so that they can either score high for the goodies or bad, or low for the baddies. So I tried to make it very clear that you're not supposed to throw your pets. But at the same time, you know, I remember when I was a kid, in the old days, I had a record player, and I used to have a hamster. And I would get the hamster out, and I'd put it on an LP, and I'd have the LP running at 33 There was one lower than that, wasn't there? I forget what it was.
Speed was 45.
Lower. There was one like 16.
16, yes, blimey.
16. Yes. And I used to put him on that, and it would, as the record went round, it would walk on the spot like a treadmill. It would just walk. If I put it up to 33, it would go for a light jog. 45, it was running. 78, it shot across the room. And I have to say, you know, I was, 10, I suppose. I found it very amusing. Of course, the poor, poor little hamster. And I think now, you know, oh, what a stupid, mean boy I was. But I sort of thought of this when I was writing the book. I thought, oh, God, I hope people don't think they can throw their pets about.
So I'm getting the impression from what I've read from the book that your interest of history is kind of embedded in it also.
Yes, I've been interested in history, and I, as you know, I used to do the old Vogue show, and we used to go around and do some walks and interview people in historic sites, and I've always had that interest in where we've come from and how people used to live. And so as I started writing this book, I was aware that because it's set, although it's set in a mythological place, it is very much England around about 1650 to 1750, somewhere around there. And some of the history is mixed up. And in fact, you get people from history drifting in and out the story as minor bit parts like Christopher Wren.
Yes, and I've noticed that.
People like that. Even Harry Ramsden gets a mention because he's invented these things called chips, which everybody thinks is a barking invention and will never work, especially if you put it with battered fish, you're joking. I just wanted to put that through. So if any grown-ups read the book, there would be something for them. And, you know, some kids might get it and other kids might not. Well as that, the place for me, I wanted to sort of give this impression that the past wasn't as clean cut as we often get it portrayed in television and films, that it was a mucky place, that people did die of disease, that the animals were in the streets. We forget that animals were in the streets, that people had them in their houses or lived with them next door to them, and that the butchers would slaughter them outside their shops and let the blood and the offal slide down the channel in the middle of the road and be swept away. We're so clean cut these days, and I think it's something that would just open children's eyes. They may not realize they're being given history because the story sort of carries everything on and these are sort of by the ways, but if they then see something else or read something else, they go, oh yeah, that was a bit like in that book I read the other day. So that they, I just feel it's important that if you're going to put a bit of that sort of history in, that you tell it how it was.
That's a really good way of putting it, really, because I mean, some kids don't like to. If you stuck a history book in front of them and said, "Read this," they'd have no interest in it whatsoever. But
no.
by doing it that way, you've kind of disguised the fact that they're actually learning something.
Absolutely, and I think that's where the novel is really good, because I mean, unless you are specifically interested in history or any niche or, you know, anything, if I'm not particularly interested in football, but if a character in a book suddenly eased into playing football or something, because I'm interested in the character and the story, the rest of it starts to have an interest for me. And I think that's true with anything. You can immerse your characters into all sorts of, you know, how many films have we seen you think, oh, I'm really not interested in baseball, but suddenly you're immersed in the story and you want the Red Sox to win for this reason or that reason, and actually you've suddenly gleaned a lot about the sport that you wouldn't ordinarily have sat down and gone, right, I'm going to study baseball. So I think that's the strength, that a novel can explore those things, and in doing, giving you the backdrop, you are actually learning something you didn't know, and you're not, because it's fun.
Yeah, I mean, I was, when I read the first chapter of the book, and like you were saying, some of the characters are names from history, and it sort of went over me at first, the first couple of names, and then I started to twig that there was a lot more names that were from history, and then I looked back again and looked at what they actually did for a living, and I thought, yeah, it does kind of tally with the historical name.
I think the first one is Miss Austin.
Yes. And she'd forgotten her writing materials.
He comes along and he says, "Oh, hello, my name's Splidge. I'm looking for, can you show me where the market hall is, the market square?" And he says, "Oh, my name's Jane." And it's all very sort of innocent. And then somebody else pops after and says, "Oh, Miss Austin, you left your writing implements in my shop."
And
it doesn't matter to the story, but to anybody that knows the name Jane Austen, will suddenly go, "Oh, wait a minute, have I just missed something?"
It's sort of the different shopkeepers do different trades that,
yes,
kind
right,
of correspond with their namesake in history.
Yes,
Mr. Darwin, the taxidermist.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing. It doesn't matter if the kids don't get it, because it doesn't affect the story. But there's, you know, anybody that does, they can have a wry smile that Mr. Newton is weights and measures, and those sort of thing. Wren and Hook, architects,
yeah.
So they just tickled me at the time, really.
It actually took me back to the Asterix books.
Oh, right.
Because some of the people in the village, the characters from the village, like there was a fishmonger called Unhygienics. there was an old fella that used to live in the town called Geriatrics.
That's brilliant. Yes, exactly. I love it.
And there was a druid who was also kept the purse strings of the village, and his name was Value Added Tax.
Oh, well, that's absolutely brilliant.
But
I didn't know that. I think that's going to make me go out and have to go and look now.
Even some of the Romans, the names were like Christmas Bonus and...
because all that was it wasn't originally English, so presumably that's all been added in the translation.
Yeah. I'd imagine that each of the different languages that it's been translated into, the humour's going to be slightly different. But yeah, in the English version, that's one of the things that really stands out. This is why I got into it, because I used to love the Asterix books when I was a kid, and I thought, yeah, this is going to be a little bit like the Asterix books, and in a way it is, and that's why I wanted to carry on reading.
Well, that's brilliant. I mean, there's sort of a bit Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, a bit Douglas Adamsy in there, with sometimes it goes off on a bit of an explanation about things which really don't necessarily add to the story, but because it's a fantasy or a made-up place, I enjoy perhaps just sort of giving a bit more of the background to it. And in many ways, because it's a trilogy and maybe more, some of the things that have just were throwaway in the first book, I've, without thinking about it, picked up on in the second book and gone, oh, yeah, because once you've made something, it's there, even though it's, you know, not really there, but it's just there in your mind. And suddenly you go, oh, yes, he's got to go into somewhere. So where's he going to go? He's going to go into such and such. And because one's elaborated a little bit on it, it just becomes more memorable.
Hello.
The Three Cuckoos Podcast.
You are here. You have downloaded us. Thank you very, very much.
That's an enormous moth.
Final cut of the podcast. We'll leave it to the deaf member.
Yeah. The deaf member of the group, yeah.
Kissifer was pretty good gummy.
Whoa, hang on. Kissifer.
Turn your fleece into a trendy gilet.
Hello, pets, and welcome to this week's how-to.
Thank you for the follow, Baratheon.
What? If I could turn back time.
Thankings. Hiya.
I'm coming!
Some cheese.
And a pickle.
Cheese and fine wine.
Oh, it's the Three Cuckoos Podcast!
That's it for this week's Celebrity News.
The worst podcast item ever.
Tune in, iTunes, Stitcher, download us, subscribe us,
yeah,
stream us.
Visit our blog, because I do that.
Yeah, and get us at Three Cuckoos.
That would be a show.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about the books is that the characters, are they based on anybody?
They're not based on anyone. And the interesting thing is the idea for the book came up to me in 1988.
Wow.
And that's a long time ago now. At the time, I was in my mid-20s, I suppose, and I was renting an office in a dance studio, and I'd been at mime school, and the idea was I wanted to put together a one-man mime show, so I rented this tiny little broom-cupboard office. It was one of these sort of ballet schools that anybody can go to, you know, after-school curriculum. But in the daytime, when kids are at school, the studio space was just sitting empty, so I would use that space to sort of put together and rehearse and put my own show. And one day it was pouring with rain, and there were a bunch of people there who were sort of arty people who gathered at this place. And we were sitting in the little coffee bar that they had there, and I thought I'd just do a bit of writing to while away the time. And I just took this piece of paper, I remember very distinctly, and I simply wrote without any pre-thought, Splidge the Cragflinger. And then I put the first line, it was always raining in the land of Gud. And I didn't know who Splidge was. I didn't know what a Cragflinger was. And I'd already then made myself this situation where it's always raining, which then sort of, obviously, when I thought about it in greater detail, started to have a more profound meaning. You know, if it's somewhere's raining all the time, then there's consequences. And I got to the point where he meets this crag, which is this orange mop-like creature but without the broom handle. And so those were two characters that came around. When I started to rewrite the book for an older audience and actually, you know, started to take the shape it is now, which was 2 years ago, the newer characters came in based on some of the earlier characters that I put in. They're not based on anybody that I could recognise or that I would say, oh, yeah, that's a friend of a friend or that's so-and-so. The weird thing about writing, certainly, and I've heard other writers say this, is that the characters just take on their own persona. And I know it sounds barking and it is a bit weird, but you can be writing a scene and you think, yeah, OK, this scene's about this and they've got to get to this point. And you're writing it and suddenly a character will say something and you go, no, I don't want you to do that. But the character wants to do that. Or the scene will suddenly, or somebody will come in and say something and change the scene. You're going, oh. And the thing about it is you have to go with it. I used to do improvisation classes and things. And the one thing they teach you more than anything else is that in improvisation, whatever somebody throws into the ring, you take it and go with it. You never block it. You should never say, you know, if suddenly a policeman comes in and says, right, you're all under arrest. You can't then go, no, we're not. You kind of have to go, oh, are we? Why? What's happened? All right, officer, I did it, or whatever it is. You take that. And so when the character started to do this, my natural reaction was to go, okay. But it was just so weird. But to answer your question, no, they're not based on anybody I know.
You mentioned there about the idea of Splidge. It has evolved, really, over the course of time. Because I can remember you playing a little bit into the Vogue show once. And
yeah, I have been fiddling about with this story on and off. And originally it was for a much younger audience. And when I started to put it into book form back in 1988, I was also working for the Services Sound and Vision Corporation. This is before satellite television was around. They would send programmes overseas to the army bases in Germany and Cyprus where British troops were stationed because they could only get the local television in those days. So they would take programmes that had just been broadcast, so they would take them off air, and then in their little studio they would put together links, their own links, And often that was, like children's television, people reading out birthday cards, but exclusively to the audience of the army's families and children, because they couldn't get British TV. And I was working on this programme, and that was all going quite nicely. And I thought, wouldn't it be great to do a Jack and Ori-style programme? And that's where I sort of adapted what I was doing with this Blidge character and the Crag. And I wrote them into 6 20-minute episodes. But as soon as I got to the end of the 6 20-minute episodes and was about to sort of propose this idea, satellite had been invented. And they no longer needed this service anymore. And so the whole thing got shelved. So I thought, oh, well, I'll publish it as a book. And, of course, self-publishing wasn't around in those days. And I sent it off to people, and it just got no thanks. And so I just put it in a drawer and did nothing with it until I was running the Vogue show. And, of course, then I was desperate for any kind of content, and I think I must have stumbled across it. And I thought, oh, well, I'll read it. And the version that I did, of course, would have been quite a younger version, pitched at a younger sort of 5-6-year-olds, whereas now... Doreen's a bit more sassy. She's 16. She's leather clad, raven hair. There's the element of romance in there. It's because I know it's 9 to 12. That nothing is overtly said, you know, because the audience isn't quite ready for it. But the grown ups should be able to read between the lines.
Yeah, that's the good thing about any. Good kids program these days. Not necessarily these days, because even in the 80s, when you had programs like Danger Mouse, it was aimed at children, but some of the jokes went over the kids' head. But they, you know, for other bits, the more slapsticky kind of stuff, they found funny. So, you know, some of the jokes were satirical, really. Yeah, so it appealed to both children and adults, which I think Splidge will do the same. Because
I hope so.
A couple of the little reviews that you've put out on Facebook, where people have said nice things about the book, it seemed to me that the adults were reading it as well as their own children.
Yes, I mean, I think what is interesting, the reason that adults have read it is because it's self-published and you've gone through Amazon and all the rest of it. It's not in Waterstones bookshops and things like that. And so, therefore, I think adults are a little bit more wary about buying something that they've never heard of, that's not recognised and is not in a sort of bookshop, and almost vet it first. And that may only be that they've just read the first, you know, first chapters to see if it's any good or whatever, or read the bits that are free online. And maybe they've just sort of gone, oh, I'll just carry on reading this because it's quite interesting. I mean, that's what I hope, obviously. And of course, on Amazon, you have to be an adult. Well, you have to be a credit card holder to have an account, and so it's invariably the adults that are writing the reviews.
Yeah, definitely. Although, if the adult has bought it for their child, the child could actually write the review under their name.
Yeah, no, I mean, some of them have. I know that one of them sort of transposed what his 7 or 8 year old kid said. But they wrote it in adult language, sort of, you know, asked them the questions. What did you think? Oh, yeah. And how did you think about this? All right. And then just sort of wrote it up. But you're right. I mean, what would be great is for kids to do a piece to camera on a YouTube video. But we're in such a politically correct world that, you know, you'd love kids to be able to go up there and just say, I read this book, really enjoyed it. My favourite character was da-da-da. But at the same time, we all have to be very careful and wary.
That's it. Because didn't you take some of the books to a local school to show the children?
I'm still in the process of doing that. I mean, I've been sending them to schools.
Oh, right.
And the teachers have been very enthusiastic at the idea of getting some free books. And they said, oh, yeah, we'll get back to you. We'll get the kids to read them and come back to you. But as yet, they haven't. But it's still early days.
Because it reminded me of a school project that I had to do when I was at my secondary school. We had to write a short story for children of about, I think it was about 6 to 8 years old. And we had to set them some work based around the story. Not only that, we had to go back to our old primary school and read the story to them, and then and then set them the work personally.
Oh, right.
And it was a hard slog. It really was. but it was fun.
Yes.
And when I heard that you were maybe getting involved with schools, I thought that that would be ideal, absolutely ideal.
It is obviously where kids are, and that's the best way to promote something. But again, when I was at school, we had all sorts of people come in, I seem to remember. But now everything has to be vetted. It has to be associated with the curriculum. There's so many dots and crosses to make sure you've got in the right order.
Yeah.
That and of course you can't just give them a whole bunch of books and say, here, give them to the kids. Somebody's got to read them and make sure there's no rude words and, and all that, because you haven't come from a recognised publishing house. So that you still have this massive amount of stages to go through. But of course, once one or two schools have got it and said, you know, we like it, it's acceptable, I imagine that there must be a sort of an inner network where people can say, oh no, this is you know, like, it's like working with kids anyway. Once you've been vetted by the police and what have you, and then you've got your certificate, I imagine that once you're in the door and they go, oh yeah, no, his work is fine with these, this age group.
Crichton, what are you doing, man?
Oh, sir, I'm listening to the Garbage Pod. It's a podcast I found in the podosphere.
Have you made it into an audiobook, or are you going to?
I have, and I was, funnily enough, I was just reading Audible's terms and conditions, and the one thing that's just made me hold back for the moment is that Audible will have the license for 7 years, which is a long time. And there's two ways that you can do it. You can put it on Audible, which is a sort of company owned by Amazon, and you can either give them exclusive rights where you get 40% of the profit of whatever it's sold for, or you can have a non-exclusive license so that I could sell it from my own website, or somebody else could sell it. But you only get 25%. So they really want you to have the rights to it. And if it takes off, obviously, you know, they get the better deal, but you get something. However, that is 7 years. And at the back of my mind, there's this thought that if I was approached or went to a big publisher with, say, two or three books at once and said, look, here's the work and here's the recordings of the audio book, I don't want anything to hinder them coming back to me with a really good deal. And so for the moment, I've just held back. So I will be selling the audio book, but directly from my own website rather than Audible for the moment.
Okay. You've kindly sent us a little clip from the book. Could you tell us a little bit about, you know, what leads up to this little clip?
Okay, so you've got Splidge is this 12-year-old who's desperately looking for work. The King is desperately after somebody to work for him. They have a meeting and Splidge gets this job. He doesn't know what a crag flinger is at this stage, but he just knows that's his job. He's forced to live at the palace. However, it's a cow shed that he is in, and he's exploring the environment in the early evening, and he takes a walk up onto the perimeter wall where all the castellations are, and is approached by a stranger.
A pudgy hand grabbed his shoulder. It hauled him back out into the daylight. Splidge spun round to see a big brute with horrible pig-like eyes. Pigface lifted the boy off the ground and shoved him hard into the space between the battlements. Splidge's heart raced, for if the man let go, the boy would fall straight into the stinky moat, 30 feet below.
"Are you the crag flinger?"
Pigface demanded, squeezing the lad's neck.
"What? Let me go." "Are you the boy that got the job at the palace today?"
"Eh?
Did you reply to the advertisement in the market square?"
"Let go!
Not until you answer the question.
You're choking me!"
"I know. That's the intention. If you want to breathe again, just tell me the truth. Has the King employed you to be his crag flinger?"
Pigface thrust the lad out further so that his legs were dangling in mid-air and there was nothing to hold on to.
I will drop you if you don't answer.
I can't breathe. Splidge was going purple and his eyes rolled backwards.
Yeah, you're the Cragflinger, all right. I recognise you from the market.
The piggy-eyed man pulled the limp boy back through the battlements and relaxed his grip.
Now, I want you to listen to me, Sunshine. Pack in the job and leave the city.
Splidge's head was spinning. He didn't understand what the horrid man was talking about.
Leave? What do you mean, leave? I've only just arrived.
Pigface lost patience, and he shook his captive firmly.
You stupid boy, you're not paying attention. Listen, you numbskull, you are to resign. Quit. Leave. You're redundant. The king has made a mistake. Your services are no longer required. Got it?
But...
There are no buts.
But...
Splidge protested.
I haven't even started work yet.
Good. Then they won't miss you, will they? Now, just bog off.
Pigface kept his firm grip.
Now let me put it another way. Consider this chat a warning. If you don't jack it in, and we're talking immediate-like, I will come back for you, and next time I won't be so pleasant. Understand?
Just then, the horrid man's expression changed, and he let out a blood-curdling howl and shot backwards. Released from the brute's grip, Splidge was in big trouble and tottered backwards over the wall, slipping down towards the moat. Instinctively, his hands shot out and he grabbed at the battlements and his fingernails scraped against the flaky stonework, but he managed to catch hold of a protruding brick and hauled himself back up. Pigface was hopping up and down in distress, desperately trying to kick off something orange and hairy from his foot. It had sunk its teeth into his fleshy ankle and was reluctant to let go. Splidge realised the miniature assailant was none other than the straggly creature that had jumped out of the kitchen sink and flown past him on the stairs earlier that day. Pigface finally yanked the animal off his foot and lobbed it over the rampart.
Ouch!
He winced, unable to put his full weight onto his bloodied leg. A stabbing pain shot up the limb, and Pigface cried out again.
Ouch!
Then he spotted Splidge by the battlements and limped over to him.
You have been warned, boy. Leave the palace. Forget about crag-flinging. If you don't, you'll be in serious trouble.
And then, looking about him in case the creature returned, the thug sloped off.
Spamhead Productions are a small independent sound recording company based in rural Hertfordshire. We specialise in creating content for all your podcasting needs, whether it be field recordings, Fox Pops, or capturing the atmosphere during social events. Editing is a very time-consuming job, so Spamhead Productions are on hand to take away some of the burden for you. Just advise us on how you'd like your content to sound, and we will do the rest. We can even help you design and manage a website for your podcast too. Visit us now, Spamhead Productions. Weebly.com. That's spamheadproductions.weebly.com.
So, Richard, how can people get hold of your book?
Well, as you can imagine, it is online. It comes in the two best formats at the moment, although the audio format will be there shortly. So you can have it as an ebook if you're into ebooks, and that can be a Kindle or on an EPUB or PDF or whatever, or you can have it as a paperback. If you want either of those, Amazon do it. And there's a very nice independent UK bookseller called Wordery.com, I think it is, Wordery.com. They also sell it. They're slightly cheaper for the paperback than Amazon. Don't ask me how they do that, but they do. I still get my royalty, so that's all right. You can get a paperback from me at my own website, and I will sign it and dedicate it to anybody you like. And again, it is slightly cheaper than any of those, and that's at my author's website, which is Richard Vobes, V for Victor, O-B-E, S for sugar, .com, richardvobes.com. Or if you want to find out more information about Splidge himself and the books and just keep up to date with what I'm doing. I'm going to be doing some stop animation to promote it and do some scenes from the book. And you can find that at www.splidge.co.uk.
That's fantastic. We've come to the end of this episode, and I want to thank you for coming on with us, because, as I say, it's been a while since you've been here, and I really hope that you're successful with Splidge, because from what I've read of it so far, it is a fantastic read.
Ah, well, that's very kind of you, Mark. It's been a pleasure to be on the show, and yeah, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. It's been nice to be podcasting again.
Well, that about wraps it up for this episode of The Garbage Pod. Be sure to visit www.thegarbagepod.weebly.com for the show notes for this or any other episode. Just look for the relevant tab in the menu. While you're on the website, why not have a nose about? You can find out a little bit more about me and the rest of the crew, and find out what's going on in the podosphere by reading the blog and much, much more. Let us know what you think of the show.
Send an email to garbagepod@virginmedia.com.
Because
your input is our output.
Or you can use the social media icons at the top of the website, which include Twitter and Facebook. If you would like to subscribe to any of our podcasts, you can do so via iTunes, the RSS feed, TuneIn and Stitcher On Demand Radio. Don't forget to review us and give us a 5-star rating. You can also listen to rebroadcasts of our shows on the 1800 Online Network at www.1800online.weebly.com. If you like what we're doing here, then why not buy us a pint by clicking on the donate button on any of the podcast pages, the blog, or the video vault. And don't forget to spread the word about us. Thanks for listening, and I'll speak to you all again soon.
The Garbage Pod is a Spamhead production.